This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has recused himself from a federal investigation into possible Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election after it was revealed he talked with a Russian official during the campaign. So he has recused himself, but some Democrats say that's not enough. He should resign. And President Trump is calling all of this a witch hunt. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll talk about this Trump administration Russia story. We'll also talk about other top stories in the news this week, including the president's address before Congress and the election of a new chair to the Democratic National Committee, and other issues in the news. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Jenny Dye is with us, research director for One Wisconsin Now and a Dane County supervisor. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me, Joy.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Well, lots going on here. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he will recuse himself from a federal investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. He was pressured to do so after revelations surfaced that he himself talked with Moscow's ambassador during the campaign, which appears to have contradicted his own sworn testimony that he gave to Congress during his confirmation hearings.
I never had meetings with Russian operatives or Russian intermediaries about the Trump campaign. And the idea that I was part of a, quote, continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government is totally false.
Democrats, including House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, are demanding still that Sessions resign over the matter. They say recusing himself is not enough. All right, Owen, first, what do you make of all this?
Well, it was a very clever controversy dropped into the media cycle after what was a pretty successful speech by Trump to Congress. So we've successfully distracted everybody with something that really shouldn't be an issue at all. Sessions, he answered the questions accurately in front of the committee, saying he wasn't speaking to Russians or Russian intermediaries about the Trump campaign, which was accurate as far as we know, and nobody has contradicted that. He did speak to the ambassador a couple times, once in a group setting, as part of his role as a sitting U.S. senator and senior member of the Senate Armed Service Committee, which is something that senators do all the time. And as we've seen, as this story has fleshed out over the past few days, senators from both sides of the aisle meet with foreign dignitaries and foreign ambassadors all the time because it's part of their job. The Senate's job is to advise and consent on foreign matters to the president, and they take that job seriously. They meet with other people, and that's both sides of the aisle, again, who do it. So it's really an effort of, interesting to watch the Democrats really go into a tizzy about the Russians are coming and stirring up the Red Scare regarding the Russians. But, you know, it's a big nothing burger, and I wish we would be talking about more substantive issues like some of the policy things that Trump was rolling out in that speech.
Yeah, well, we will. It's a nothing burger. Shouldn't Sessions have said, well, in my role as a senator, I met with the Russian ambassador, but it had nothing to do with Trump's campaign. Why did he not say that in front of Congress?
Perhaps he should have, but he wasn't asked that. He was asked very specifically if he met with any Russians regarding the Trump campaign or regarding a CNN report about the Trump campaign colluding with the Russians and all of that. He was answering that specific question and answered it specifically. Remember, he's a lawyer, and lawyers answer questions very specifically in how they're asked. They don't necessarily expound on all the other details that are out there. I would also add that it's that in all these accusations of Sessions met with the Russians, and this is a big controversy, Nobody's actually said what those meetings may have been about or what controversial thing may have happened, whether it was collusion or Russians funneling money into the Trump campaign or whatever. Nobody's made any serious accusations about what the results about that may be. It's just that he met with the Russian ambassador as a sitting senator, and somehow we're supposed to get all lathered up about that. Sorry, not gonna.
Well, here's President Trump's statement. Jeff Sessions is an honest man. He did not say anything wrong. He could have stated his response more accurately, but it was clearly not intentional. This whole narrative is a way of saving face for Democrats losing an election that everyone thought they were supposed to win. The Democrats are overplaying their hand. They lost the election, and now they have lost their grip on reality. The story, the real story, is of all the illegal leaks and classified and other information. This is a total witch hunt. Jenny Dye, what do you say about that?
Well, I think this entire story, and unfortunately so many that we have seen come out of the Trump administration thus far, whether it's Sessions or others, goes to trust. And absolutely, this is an issue of trust. And whether or not Jeff Sessions continues to be someone that the American people can have trust in to oversee an investigation, I think the answer to that is clearly no. And it's good as a first step to see him saying that he would recuse on such an investigation. But as an attorney, I think that we should be held to a higher standard. We should be held to a standard that when we are doing work at the Department of Justice on behalf of the American people, that all Americans can have faith in the work that we're doing and that we're being completely upfront and frank with them when we are asked questions. And I think Jeff Sessions did not adhere to that standard in this case. And at the end of the day, in order for him to be able to do his job, he needs to have the faith of not only President Trump, but the American people. And he seems to be in a position where he's quickly losing that. If he didn't have anything to hide, then he didn't need to hide it. He could have done just as you suggested, Joy, and been upfront with the committee when they were asking questions, both in writing and during his hearing, and he wasn't. And that was a failure on Jeff Sessions' part.
So do you think that Democrats calling for his resignation are right or wrong, Jenny?
I think that they're right. I mean, we should expect that when somebody appears before the U.S. Senate to answer questions, that they get the truth and the whole truth. Anybody who watches a legal show on TV understands the idea about the truth and the whole truth. We should expect that when somebody is a U.S. senator who is up for nomination to head the Department of Justice, that they also will be providing us with the whole truth.
Yeah. And what is your reaction, Owen, to the calls for resignation? Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't have your button on. Now you can talk.
Sorry about that. I think the calls for resignation are way over the line, and you'll forgive my guffaws about the sanctity of truth coming from the Democratic Party right now, when we had Eric Holder, who attorney general, who ran guns to Mexico, lied to Congress about it, was held in contempt, and yet still stayed over the investigation of himself of whether he did anything wrong. And Loretta Lynch is attorney general, who met with Bill Clinton on a plane on the tarmac while the FBI was investigating his wife's email scandal and all, and did not recuse herself. So, you know, you'll forgive me if I get a little upset with the Democrats for how suddenly we're all supposed to be, really on to Sessions for something, which, again, was he answered the question accurately. He answered the question, a specific question with a specific answer. He was accurate. And even if he, as a sitting U.S. senator, has every right and responsibility to meet with these people and to, as part of his job, representing his constituents.
We have a lot of callers on this. Jeremy and Racine, go ahead.
I think, Steve, the one concern I have, the only concern I have in this whole situation with Jeff is, in regards to classified information being leaked once again to the mainstream media. When I was reading the New York Times, they couldn't indulge their contact because it was classified information. That, to me, is more a concern than him speaking to an ambassador from Russia.
So is that more of a concern, Owen?
I think it is a concern. I think, the first question was, why was the, and this has happened a few times now, where we've seen evidence of our intelligence agencies listening in on the conversations of private citizens with foreign nationals and all these things we were supposed to be very concerned about when Bush was president. But these things were happening while Obama was still president. But more importantly, then that information is taken and being leaked to the media in very strategic ways, like Trump's conversations with foreign leaders and things that, as an American, I don't want that stuff being leaked to the media. I think our leaders in the executive and legislative branches should be able to have frank, honest discussions with foreign leaders without it being leaked to the press all the time. So I think the fact that our intelligence community is leaking to the press right now is a serious concern, and I think it's something that needs to be tightened up.
Is this a concern that's worse than the Sessions meeting with the Russians, Jenny Dye?
I don't think so. And I think one thing that we have to think about when we're looking at all these leaks is, why are there so many leaks coming out of this administration? Some of them are coming from the White House itself, it seems like, on a daily basis. And the intelligence community, there are professionals who have been there through multiple administrations. Why suddenly are we seeing people feel like they need to bring information forward to the press to make sure that it gets into the hands of the American people? That, to me, is really what is very concerning about these leaks, not the leaks themselves, but that people who are in positions to know these things are so concerned that they are bringing this information to light.
Bob in Chippewa Falls says he thinks Sessions should have to go back to the Senate committee and explain himself, and then maybe there should be a conversation about him resigning. Bob says it's premature for him to step down right now. Dave in Madison, go ahead.
Yes, I think your guest forgets that Donald Trump asked for Russia's help out loud in a perfectly clear way during the campaign to help him get elected. This investigation is about whether or not Donald Trump committed treason by colluding with Russians to get himself elected president.
All right, so this is a very important investigation, according to Dave. Owen, what do you say about that?
Well, first off, Trump says a lot of stupid stuff. I think if we hang our hat on everything he says, I think he's shown evidence that he tends to talk out of his rear end quite a bit. And
it should be noted that you weren't a big Trump supporter, Owen.
I'm sorry, wasn't that obvious?
Yes.
I think as an American, again, if the Russians did interfere with our election, it's something we should all be serious about, and we should investigate, and we should get to the bottom of it and figure out if they did. I don't think, if for decades now, particularly during the Cold War, it was common for the Russians to get involved in foreign elections to try to sway them through covert means and sometimes overt means. It was also, by the way, common for the U.S. to do it through the CIA, through a lot of areas. So this is not unprecedented territory for a foreign power to try and influence the election happening either in an ally or in an antagonist. Remember that it was actually Obama who actually invested a lot of money into the Israeli election and tried to unseat Netanyahu because he disagreed with that administration. So it's not uncommon for it to happen. It's a bit untoward. But certainly if they are in our election and did anything to influence, we need to get to the bottom of it. That being said, there's no evidence they did. The way that we have a distributed election process with local control and local voting machines, there's no evidence whatsoever that the Russians were able to hack any of that or influence anything. The only evidence there is that perhaps the Russians backed a group of hackers who hacked into the DNC and then dumped that stuff out into the media, which was then damaging to Democrats. The fact that it was damaging to Democrats is because it was nasty, horrible stuff they were doing. Nobody's denied that denied that they weren't doing what they were doing. But the fact that it was released to the media is where the quote unquote evidence of Russian hacking quote unquote comes in. But a lot of that gets confused if the media just talks about the Russians hacking the election. But as I said, that being said, we need to investigate it. We need to figure out. But I don't think it has much to do with Sessions meeting with an ambassador as part of his job as a senator.
All right. Jenny, you get final word on this topic, and then we'll move along.
Well, I think there's a lot of ways to influence election that don't go to just what is happening at the actual ballot box, and absolutely interrupting the narrative that campaigns would like to be on with coordinated social media campaigns that we've heard discussed, and hacking of things like the DNC and then planting stories in the media is part of that. But the bottom line is we don't know what the evidence is because we don't know what the evidence is yet. We see these leaks occasionally that give us some insight into what might be going on, but we still don't know. And we need Republicans in Congress to take this issue more seriously than they are right now and actually do a full investigation that the American people can have faith in. And we need the people leading that investigation to be people who didn't have ties to the Trump campaign, which is exactly why the testimony of Jeff Sessions in the Senate hearing is an issue, because the bottom line is that if he had answered that he met with the Russian ambassador while being the top Senate surrogate for Trump, it would have killed his nomination, because there are so many unanswered questions right now about the ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. And that's why he wasn't honest when he was in front of the Senate.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives. Today we are talking with Jenny Dye and Owen Robinson. When we come back from break, we will talk about President Trump's first address before a joint session of Congress and other top stories in the news. What else would you like to talk about? Did you like that speech or not? Why or why not? A poll is out saying that people are more optimistic now after President Trump's speech. Does that describe you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different political perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. What happened in the news this week that you want to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking today with Owen Robinson, who is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and Jenny Dye, a research director for One Wisconsin Now and a Dane County supervisor. President Trump delivered his first address to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday night. He addressed a host of familiar themes from his campaign, and he called for unity to address a wide range of issues that he says are plaguing the country. Let me start with you, Jenny Dye, your reaction to President Trump's first unofficial State of the Union.
Well, it was great to see him once again show us one of the handful of times he's been able to stay on message and read a teleprompter. But I don't think that that's cause for celebration. We've seen this before. We've heard this narrative before where Trump is able to, in one speech, stay on message, and then in the days or sometimes hours after, he is completely off message again, off on Twitter, sending whatever it might be, out attacking really, we don't know. It could be a private citizen. It could be one of his political allies. It's always a surprise with President Trump. And that really is why the speech to me is almost meaningless at this point, because what really matters is the day-to-day actions that we see come out of the White House, and those continue to be incredibly concerning. And even the day of the speech, he was doing things like questioning whether or not attacks that were happening at Jewish cemeteries were false flag operations that were being done to create the impression that anti-Semitism was something that we needed to be concerned about. I mean, there's so much going on that what he says when he's reading a teleprompter is the least of my concerns.
Owen?
It was a fascinating piece of political rhetoric and theater. To Jenny's point, he was on message. He was calm. He was measured. You see, much of the reaction was he looked presidential. The polls have been, 70%+ approve of his message. It was optimistic. It was unifying. But it was also out there defining what's really a a change, a third way, a different political ideology than the traditional left versus right, red versus blue that we've been going back and forth for the past couple decades in this country. So it's very, very populist, very economically nationalistic, protectionist. There was a lot in that speech, frankly. If you're a liberal, I don't know why you weren't standing up and cheering. There's a lot of things on there like hitting at NAFTA and paid maternity leave and keeping entitlements off the table, a $1 trillion spending plan for stimulus. A lot of things there that Democrats and liberals used to support and you would have thought have been supporting, which is what made their reaction look all that much more petty. And when you saw Pelosi and Schumer sitting on their hands as the rest of the assembly was cheering the widow of a fallen soldier, or cheering the fact that some companies had chosen to keep jobs in the U.S. or were investing in the U.S., made them look really petty and really small. And I think you see in the polls afterward that reflected, where even a substantial percentage of Democrats were saying this was a good speech, this was a unifying speech. To Jenny's point, we'll see what the next day brings. And of course, we've gotten into the big Sessions distraction. But the reality is that was a very critical speech that I think really sets the direction of the Trump presidency for perhaps the next 7 years here.
The Democrats might have been sitting on their hands on a number of occasions, but I thought that it was debunked that they did not stand to clap for the widow of the fallen Navy SEAL.
Most of them did. Most of them had the integrity to do. Pelosi stood up for a little bit, a few seconds, and then sat back down. As did a couple of her henchmen.
Well, but there wasn't. I know that there's been some stories out there that the meme that's running around that says that these Democrats didn't stand up to clap for the widow were false. But I just wanted to clarify.
Right. Jenny,
what do you make of what Owen just said there? That maybe liberals should be cheering some of this stuff that Trump was saying in the speech.
Well, it goes back to the same thing we were just talking about in the previous section, which is trust. And Trump has shown time and time again that you can't trust anything that he is saying at one particular moment to be what we're going to hear from him at the next. And so even if he's talking about something like paid family leave that I strongly support, first of all, I don't think his policy goes far enough in actually helping the people who need help with paid family leave. But secondly, I don't believe that he's actually going to be in it and fighting for us on that issue. I don't believe that we're going to make progress in the way that we need to with Trump as the one leading it, because he cannot stay on message for long enough to actually do real good for the American people. And I would much rather see someone up there who can make progress on the issues that we as a nation need to. Trump is not the guy who can come out and talk to us about the time for trivial fights being behind us. He's not the guy who can come out and tell us we need to unite, because he's the guy who's out there trying to be as divisive as possible and attacking individuals on a daily basis. And so it's just not credible at the end of the day.
And here's where I don't understand the Democrats' tactics here. And I appreciate your point, Jenny, that he's not the guy to talk about trivial fights. but take paid maternity leave, for example. This is a policy that Democrats have been pushing for forever, right? It's something some European countries have. They think we should do, yada, yada, yada. I get the case. Here the Democrats are in the minority in Congress. They're the severe minority in the House. They're not minority in the Senate. They don't have the presidency. There's no chance that the Democratic Party can advance that policy initiative on their own. But if the Republicans are saying, and particularly President Trump is saying, that he wants it and he's going to push his Republican colleagues in it, why wouldn't the Democrats cooperate on that and try and get what they can get? Try and get, even if it doesn't go far enough or it isn't exactly what you want, take the policy win. And move forward. To me, it just shows the Democrats are much more interested in opposing Trump and setting up the resist movement than they are in actually advancing the policy initiatives that they think will benefit the American people.
Since both of you brought up the trivial bickering, let's take a listen to President Trump at the end of his speech when he said it is time to focus on substantive issues and leave frivolous bickering in the past. Here's what he said.
The time for small thinking is over. The time for trivial fights is behind us. We just need the courage to share the dreams that fill our hearts, the bravery to express the hopes that stir our souls, and the confidence to turn those hopes and those dreams into action.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org if you would like to weigh in on the issues that President Trump brought up during his address before Congress. Craig in Alaska is with us. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I'm going to change what I said a little bit. I took some offense when President Trump talked about the death of the SEAL in Yemen. He made so much of the Khan family who lost their son in combat. Both died in the service of their country. Both should have been honored. And to have him stand up before the nation and make a huge deal out of Owen's death and not Khan's death, to me, is ridiculous. He should be honoring both.
All right. Thank you, Craig. Jane and Phillips, I think, wants to talk about that particular issue, or at least related issue as well. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I just wanted to say that Donald Trump's address this week was incredibly sincere. This man has America's best interest at heart. He has a smorgasbord of issues that he needs to fix that he inherited. People need to stop having tantrums and protesting. Give this president a chance. My God, he's been in office less than 2 months. We need to unite our country. And when President Trump did honor the fallen Navy SEAL and his widow, for anyone to see that as an ulterior motive, in my view, is very sick and has no respect for our military.
All right. Thank you very much, Jane. Well, let's play a clip from that speech. One of the most discussed portions of the address was when he introduced the widow of the Navy SEAL that was killed last month in a raid in Yemen. After thanking William Ryan Owens for his service, the gallery applauded for nearly 2 minutes. When Trump acknowledged his widow, Corinne, and then after this long-standing ovation, this is what President Trump had to say.
And Ryan is looking down right now, you know that, and he's very happy because I think he just broke a record.
All right, so is that politicizing his death, Jenny?
Well, listen, we've seen presidents from both parties honor the families of fallen soldiers, and so that certainly is not out of step with what has traditionally happened in American politics. But on the other hand, I was troubled by his comment about how we had somehow broken a record with the applause, because this is exactly the sort of moment that I would hope as president that you want to avoid, where one of our troops who, through your decisions, has been placed in harm's way, as is the job of any soldier, loses their life. And we have that impact on our nation and very deeply on their family and friends. And so I thought it was appropriate, of course, to honor his family and his loss. But I also was struck by how out of step with how I was feeling in that moment, that the conversation about how that applause had set a record of some sort. Because what a sad record to have set, and it's the sort of record that I would hope that we wouldn't ever speak about, and certainly I hope that we don't have the opportunity to break it again in the future.
Yeah, some people, Chris Matthews, Michael Moore, Bill Maher, accused Trump of using the SEAL's widow as a prop. Owen, what do you say?
Well, I agree with Jenny. It's something that presidents and politicians of both parties have done for a long time. It's actually Reagan, who pioneered the use of using people in the audience during the State of the Union to humanize issues as he was talking about them. Clinton perfected it, honestly, and did it. And, you know, so it's become common, and I don't think it's inappropriate at all for a president to honor the family and soldiers who died under his watch. As far as the comment at the end, I mean, you're getting really, really looking for controversy there. It is not, we have all done this where you've been with somebody who's lost a family member and you try to give comfort by saying, oh, they're looking down and I'm sure they're happy that we're all gathered, or that, you know, their child graduated from school, or they set a record at the speech, or whatever. It's just trying to give comfort to the family. It's a very human move that Democrats are, again, they're just so gratingly against Trump, they can't even let something simple like that go without trying to make it controversial.
Deacon in Sheboygan is with us. Hi, Deacon.
Good morning. Thank you for the program. Just a short issue with one of your guests. The Republican take. I don't understand how they can take the slant that this is the second coming now, just because this guy has run around the country like an adolescent loose cannon for the last how many months, and everything he says and does, and now suddenly he gets up in front of us and reads a speech which obviously was written and prepared by somebody else for an hour and 15 minutes, and it's magic. Everything is okay. It's wonderful. The direction of the country is solved. Everybody's smiling the next day. How do you get that?
Owen, just because he read a good speech doesn't mean he's really changed at all?
Well, if I gave any impression that I thought Trump was the second coming, I apologize. I certainly do not think he is. And I think I listed a few policy issues that he brought out in that speech that I vehemently disagree with. So I don't know what you're listening to. I think you're listening more to the echo of the liberals of what they think we're thinking rather than what we're actually thinking. And I do get a real big kick out of this little meme that's going around in liberal circles that Trump didn't write the speech and was reading off the teleprompter. I'm sorry, that's been happening for presidents for about 50 years now. So if you're just catching up, yes, presidents don't write their own speeches, and yes, they read off the teleprompter.
I'm going to go to one more. Randy in Madison is with us. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. I'm calling from a VA hospital, so if you're going to say that I don't respect veterans, you're walking on the fighting side of me. I thought that the Ryan Owens thing was very, very cynical, and it was very manipulative. It was certainly... it made it hard for Mr. Owen's father to raise the stink that he was going to do. And I found that there was a lot of very masterful manipulation going on throughout the speech.
You know what, I'm going to jump in, Randy, because I thought your primary point was in part the Navy SEAL's father was very critical of President Trump, I think even earlier in the day, about that mission that took the life of his son. Owen, you want to react to that?
Well, first off, Randy, thank you for your service, and I truly appreciate the Merle Haggard reference there. It's politicians of all stripes always are looking to manipulate public opinion, and they do so. That's why these people are in the audience, to both honor them, but also to shape public opinion around issues. So if, whether you call that manipulative or whether you call it politics, it's something that politicians do. And I think the fact that, I think we're still trying to understand whether that raid was successful as Trump defines it, or whether it was not, I think, whether it was or not doesn't change the fact that Owens went out and died for his country, for a cause, for us and for our freedom. And I think honoring that is certainly appropriate.
Jenny, you want to weigh in?
Well, I think in these situations, it is hard because different family members have different reactions to what has happened. And certainly Owen's father has spoken out in opposition to some of what we have heard about the raid itself and how Owen's lost his life. And he deserves to be heard and honored in how he is feeling about that as well, just as we saw Corinne honored in her presence at the joint session the other night. But at the end of the day, that's what America is about. We all get to have our own reactions and our own opinions and share those. And I think this is one of those situations where there are some clear divisions about how that particular raid was handled. But regardless of how we feel about that, we can mourn the loss of someone who signed up to fight for our country.
Jerry and Monona, go ahead.
Hello. I think Trump was in La La Land Tuesday night. He wants to have massive tax cuts, and he wants expensive programs like the wall between here and Mexico, and he wants to boost the defense budget, where we already spend over 50% of our government spending on defense now. He also has three generals in his cabinet. Does this sound like war?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in with this one, too. Owen, is Trump in La La Land thinking we have all the money to do what he wants to do with this, you know, budget blueprint?
Well, the La La Land makes me think of the Oscars.
I know.
This was by no means a limited government conservative speech. This was this is a big government populist nationalistic speech and policy initiatives that are around there. And frankly, I agree with Jerry. There's America's broke. Obama doubled our national debt. We have a tremendous amount of debt. Our economy, although has been trucking along at a minimal rate, we haven't seen the surge in growth that we'd seen in the past. We're hoping to see it now. The stock market certainly seems to be indicating it may be coming as a leading indicator. But we don't have the money for all he's talking about, and without also putting entitlements on the table and looking at that, which is the vast majority of our government spending. And just to correct you, Jerry, the military is only about 16% of our federal budget. So, I'm with Jerry. We don't have the money for all he's talking about. I don't know where it's going to come from, and I certainly don't want to see us just keep running that debt ticker into the ground.
What do you think about the increase of $54 billion for the defense budget, Jenny Dye, at the apparently at the expense of domestic programs and foreign aid and some other things?
Well, I think we have a lot of things that we need to address in our nation in terms of our domestic policy, and my priority would not be growing the military budget by that much. Certainly, when we send the military into harm's way, they need to have the resources in order to do that effectively. But that also includes intelligence resources. It includes a strong State Department that can help to avoid the need to engage in military intervention. And it includes actually having a strong country here at home and taking care of our own people. And so we need to look at what our priorities are. And I think the Trump proposal right now in terms of investment in the military seems to be out of line with what I think those priorities should be. And certainly the more money that we put there, the less funding that we have for other areas. And that is a problem. On the other hand, America is a nation that has resources. And so if we want to do things like address tax policy, address investment in things like paid family leave, we don't have to cut entitlements in order to do that. We don't have to buy into the idea that there are false choices here. We can do things in America. We have the resources. It's whether or not we have the political will to make sure that we have the funding to back them up.
When we come back from break, we'll talk about the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, electing a new chair over the weekend. And we'll talk about whether we might have a President Oprah Winfrey in our future. That's coming up on The Week in Review. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in the news this week. Jenny Dye is with us, Research Director for One Wisconsin Now. She's also a Dane County Supervisor. And Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. The Democratic National Committee elected a new chair over the weekend. Former Labor Secretary Tom Perez says he wants to bring a culture of change to the party as he tries to rebuild in the era of President Trump. Perez defeated Keith Ellison for the chairmanship, but he brought Ellison on as deputy chair right away. So, Jenny Dye, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that was a really great move on the part of Perez, and I was glad to see the unity displayed by making that his first action out of the gate. And I think he and Ellison thus far have been showing that they mean it, that they are united and they're going to be working together to put the best foot forward for Democrats across the country. I think it's an exciting time to be a Democrat right now. If you look around the nation, we see that people on the left are energized and they are ready to engage and they're ready to fight back. And the things that unite us on the left side of the aisle are much greater than the things that have divided us as we've been talking throughout the course of the past year and throughout the DNC race.
After Perez's win, President Trump tweeted that he and the GOP could not be happier for him, Perez, to which Perez responded that he and the Democrats would be Trump's worst nightmare. Owen?
Trump is a master of trolling Democrats, isn't he? But, you know, the things like chairman party heads are always kind of backroom politics. But where they're interesting is they tell us who runs the party right now. And I think what we see is this is still Obama's Democratic Party. Perez is his guy, his former labor secretary, and he's still pulling the strings behind it. So, which I think honestly is good for Democrats. Obama has been a power in the party for some time and certainly has access to a lot of money and goodwill within the Democratic Party. But really, the difference between Perez and Ellison on policy is minute. They are peas in a pod. The difference between them is in tactics, in that Ellison is much more wanted to be out front and have the far-left message, the Bernie Sanders message, and carry that flag and saw that as a future, whereas Perez wants to, while believing the same thing, take a more tactical approach, focused more in the middle of the country. So same direction, different tactics, but this is still Obama's Democrats.
Are Bernie Sanders supporters or that wing of the party disappointed, Jenny, as far as you know?
Well, I think whether it's an election for president or it's an election for DNC, if you are strongly supporting a candidate and they lose, there's always a little bit of disappointment that goes along with that. But I think, by and large, people care more about the big picture of making sure that we are doing right by each other as Americans and advancing the policy agenda that Democrats believe in than they do about whose name is behind the word DNC chair.
All right, here, could Oprah Winfrey carry the torch for Democrats in 2020? In an interview that took place in December but just aired this week, Oprah Winfrey was asked if she would consider running for president. And here's what she had to say.
I actually never thought I never considered the question even a possibility. I just thought, oh.
Right, because it's clear that you don't need government experience to be elected president of the United
States,
right?
I thought, oh, gee, I don't have the experience. I don't know enough. I don't know. And now I'm thinking, oh.
Okay. All right.
All right. So she didn't say yes, but would Oprah Winfrey be Trump's worst nightmare, Owen?
I don't know about worst nightmare. That's a long ways away. But I just have this vision of Oprah in the podium in front of the joint session of Congress saying, you get an entitlement and you get a handout and you get a budget increase. And I think it'd be awesome. It'd be a fantastic campaign.
A reaction to whether Oprah Winfrey might indeed be a candidate, Jenny?
Well, I think we certainly don't need to take the message of this election as being that we have to find a celebrity on the left to compete with celebrity on the right. I think we can compete with our ideas, and what we're seeing right now is that Democrats are energized behind our ideas, and whether it's Oprah Oprah Winfrey. Yeah. Apparently, she shouldn't run because I'm not going to be able to say her name. Or someone else who is the standard bearer for that. We are going to fight for those policies, for those ideals, and we're going to win that fight because we're already seeing that the tide is turning. Trump's favorability is horrible across the nation, and we're going to make sure that more people show up at the ballot box when it's time to make sure that those votes are counted.
Vice President Mike Pence,
I think that,
very briefly, Owen.
I was going to say, what I think that whole discussion about Oprah reveals is that the bench of the Democratic Party is very weak, and the fact that Trump is a celebrity, won the presidency, kind of washes away or covers up the fact that the Republicans have been winning at the state house and Senate and Congress for several cycles now, and have a very strong and deep bench of really great people.
Huh.
And the Democrats just don't.
The Democrats have a weak bench, Jenny?
Well, I think Democrats definitely need to grow our bench. That's something that groups have been working on across the country. And I think even more so, we will see great new leaders coming forward, and already have seen that happen since the election. People are energized. People want to get involved. And I think the election of Trump has made people who previously, just like Oprah said, well, I don't think I can do that, say, I can do that. If Trump can do it, why not me?
Vice President Mike Pence is going to be in Janesville today, an invitation-only event. Blaine Supply said that he will be joined by House Speaker Paul Ryan and Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price. Blaine also says Pence will hold a listening session with farmers and local business owners in Janesville. So, Owen, what are your friends telling you about this visit?
I think it just reminds us that, you really have to sit back and wonder, just as a Wisconsinite, that we are really at the center of American politics in a lot of different ways, with Paul Ryan, with Walker's close attachment with Pence, with Reince Priebus as the chief of staff. Wisconsin is at the center of the United States political universe right now, and we're going to see a lot of high-level traffic through our state for the next few years. And I think it benefits Wisconsin to have this sort of attention on the issues that are specific and important to Wisconsinites.
We actually have a call on what, I think we have time, Mary in Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hi, good morning. I'm calling about something you didn't touch base on yet, and that is regarding the Fox News Internet article on Pence. And he reportedly used private email accounts to discuss state business. So that's in the news. That's something brand new.
Yeah, Pence used a private email while an AOL account, I believe, while governor of Indiana, and it was hacked. And apparently all of his friends or all of the people on his email got some sort of email from the hacker. Jenny Dye, is that a concern?
Well, I think now we know that America's VP is online, and this is a concern for Pence. It's a concern, I think, broadly, that we need better security for those elected officials who hold office, because whether it's this or the things that we talked about at the opening of the show with Russia, hacking seems to be coming to the forefront. We need to make sure that communication is protected where it needs to be, but we also need to make sure that people are using the right accounts so that there's transparency when it's needed. And after an election in which Hillary was constantly berated about her emails, the fact that we're now seeing Pence having conducted business on his own private email is just ironic, but also really sad, because we should have been talking about real issues and not people's email accounts.
Well, we're going to have that be last word as we are out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us. Jenny Dye is a research director for One Wisconsin Now and a Dane County supervisor. And Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Thank you to Bill Mertens for producing this program. Thank you for listening. We'll have the latest in state politics coming up in our state capitol report Monday between 7 and 8. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.